Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy. Hey folks, this is episode number 146. This week we have my friend Andrew Scambetti on, and he's going to talk about the greatest show on earth.
The greatest show on earth? Is it that Hugh Jackman movie? Or that's the greatest, just the greatest showman?
That's the greatest showman. Yeah. So we hand the floor over to you, Andrew. Start talking.
The floor over to me. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. It's unfortunate that we are talking about a thing that can't be seen right now. Anyone who has followed me over the last couple of months knows that I did release a Kiss fan film, The Greatest Show on Earth, which you know we'll talk about in length. And it has since been taken down off YouTube. And again, my motives for doing this wasn't to make money, wasn't to do anything like that. So it is down right now, and it's going to stay down for the time being until I could figure something out. But, it was kind of like a what-if scenario. What if Kiss had put out a proper in-concert movie in 1977, and we didn't get Phantom of the Park? What would have happened? You had all these other bands, David Bowie, Alice Cooper, The Who, Led Zeppelin, you name it. All these great bands of the time had these awesome in-concert movies. Why didn't Kiss have one? Kiss had the fantasy aspect, bar none and all these. So why wasn't there a proper Kiss movie done? Why couldn't they have done a Kiss movie with, cartoon and animated the comic book? Why couldn't they have done that? So, I had this idea for a really long time to take those three concerts that are available from the 77 period, sync them up painstakingly to Kiss Alive 2, and kind of tell Kiss's story throughout the film and kind of really bring you back to 1977, because that's the tagline of the movie, Welcome Back to 1977. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to really bring you back to a simpler time. And how do you do that? I mean, people could just put a bunch of words on the screen and say this is a 70s movie or this and that. So, but I took the way that I kind of approached that is I go, well, I'm going to put an old style VHS play screen on there. I'm going to put things that you remember in the 70s in there and just take you back to a simpler time and a time where there was almost no infighting among the Kiss Army. So, you guys have seen it, so I hope I did what I set out to do.
Well, you referenced three Kiss concerts from the 70s that you used. Yes. Could you explain to the listeners who may not be familiar with those shows specifically which ones you're talking about?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Released on Kissology Volume 1 was Largo, 1977, December 20th, 1977, and Houston, September 1st and 2nd, 1977. The complete concert, September 1st, was on Kissology Volume 1, and September 2nd has been released in pieces over other Kiss releases, such as Kiss Exposed, Extreme Close-Up, things like that. So, but in the bootleg world, it's something that has circulated for many, many years. I tried very, very hard not to use anything that wasn't officially released. This isn't a bootleg. This isn't a cash grab. This isn't made up of stolen footage. This is assembling officially released footage, much like very popular fan edits that are really popular in the Star Wars community, and kind of give you a new product. It's been well documented that Kiss Alive 2 has had some studio sweetening, and maybe Kiss didn't sound like that live, but what I wanted is I wanted you to see Kiss at their visual peak, and I wanted you to hear Kiss Alive 2. Because according to a lot of the Kiss fans, they say Kiss Live 2 is at least up there in the great live rock and roll records, at least in the 70s, my opinion.
So if you're using material that has been officially released through Kiss, with the Kissologies or whatever, do you think that this is a product that once it's done and maybe someone in the Kiss world sees, they may say, hey, we would like to take this and make it an official release?
I hope that happens, but that wasn't why I did this. I did this out of an extreme passion for Kiss and for this time period. I just wanted to invoke the same reaction that I have for Kiss into someone else. I wanted them to sit down and watch us and say, wow, this is what it felt like, or wow, could this have been what it felt like for the people that weren't there? You know, it's a very, how can I put this? I ignored legalities on this and I approached it as an artist. But again, you know, all over this product, I said, that's not for sale. If you want to support this product, go out and buy an official Kiss record. Go and buy Kiss tickets at the end of the road tour. Go and shop on the Kiss official Kiss store. I don't want any money from this. If you want to support this film, support Kiss. Make a stand. This could be something that gives a message to the band and a message to the fans that this is something that we want. So, you know, I never approached it thinking that it was going to be an officially released product, and I just kind of did it out of my love for the band.
Well, there was a concert film that was released, right? That was on HBO. But that was in, was that in 77 or 78, or was it a little bit later?
It was
the same set list. So, I mean, the same stage show. So I think it must have been 78 or something.
Well, it was aired on NHK TV, and it was edited down. NHK is Japanese TV, and it was edited down into something called the Young Music Show, which was like a 60-minute concert that...
I was trying to remember the name of that.
I mean, I could talk about Kiss videos, you know, all day. But it was edited down 60 minutes, and it was the April, I believe it was the April 2nd shows. And there was two shows on April 2nd. There was a matinee show, and then there was a 7 p.m. show. So NHK filmed both of those shows, and they edited them into what we see as the Young Music Show. Later on, in 1979, HBO picked up the very same concert and kind of tweaked it a little bit, and HBO aired a portion of the concert. Well, still, the concert at that point hadn't been complete. So you have a full concert. And let me tell you, that Tokyo 77 show, if you're just watching this, if you're just tuning in for the first time, or if you're just hearing about this, this Tokyo 77 show is available on Kissology Volume 1, the complete show, not the Young Music show, not the HBO version. The complete show is available. And Eddie Kramer did mix this because... For you Kiss fans that maybe don't know, this was recorded and anticipated to be a Japanese-only live record, Rock and Roll Party in Tokyo. Anyway, seek out that concert. The concert's awesome. But again, you had an official concert, but it was lacking something. It was just a concert. And it was a concert that, nothing against the Japanese audience, a concert that America had no ties to. So even though... HBO aired something like that in 1979 and NHK aired it in 1977. Still, I don't think that ever reached its full potential, my opinion.
It's just interesting because I remember when that came out and we had just gotten HBO at the time, and it was, I mean, I was up, I watched the first time it was on, I think it was like at 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight or something like that. I watched it. It was on 12 times that month, and I watched it 12 times and it was setting my alarm clock at 2 o'clock in the morning to get up, and
yeah, but
I only had it on one TV in the house because, you know, back then, well, you may not know, but back then you had to have a box, and you had to I mean, you had to flip stuff around, and it was all complicated and stuff. But my mom was like, her bedroom is right next to the living room.
Yeah, and Bill and I are so old that we were the remote control.
that's a fact, man.
Yeah, but just, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from that experience because that's an awesome experience to see Kiss on TV. But don't you think that it could have been so much more? You had fans of Led Zeppelin that got to go see The Song Remains the Same in a theater. You had David Bowie had a concert in the theater. You had, you know, Alice Cooper had a concert in the theater. You had The Who. So, you know, you have all these other great bands that are from the same time period that are really well respected. But Kiss didn't have that.
You know, that's one thing that, you know, I totally agree. There are, Kiss is such a visual band that they missed the boat so many times in the 70s to capture all of that magic.
I agree. And the intro of The Greatest Show on Earth, it says, in 1977, Kiss reached their visual peak. This impressive spectacle was never properly documented. Until now.
There you go.
Yeah, I watched it, and I thought it was, I mean, it was really cool. Well, very well done. So, you know, I just I you know, it was very reminiscent of going back there, but you get the story, and I thought it was pretty cool. So it's unfortunate that it's taken down and not available, but hopefully it will be, you know, hopefully that's, yeah. you know, you can't, you know, they at some point have to understand that, and will understand, I'm sure, that this legacy that they want to continue on has to come through the fans, because, you know, my kids go because I go. You know, they are into KISS because I'm into KISS. They're not into KISS because that's what they're listening to on the radio. And that's going to die off pretty soon.
Because
that's how it's going to live on. If it's going to live on, you know.
I think it will live on. And I hope that this sends a message that I want it to live on. I want this band to live on for generations to generations. You know, you have these great Beatle concerts that are released on DVD. You have Elvis concerts that are out there. Queen just had a great biopic that was out there too, but there's nothing for KISS. So this is my love letter to KISS. And I was really shocked that no one had tried to do this of all the years, that a little guy from New Jersey who's just over 30 years old had the idea to do this in 2017, because the whole project took about a year to do from beginning to end. And the way that it started is I had the idea on a really, really long road trip that I was on. And I was driving and I was just narrating into my notepad on the phone. And it's funny how a lot of the notes in that original stream of consciousness ended up in the film. So my original idea didn't really stray a whole lot. There were some differences. I mean, there are about four versions. Well, there are about four versions of the film that I completed. And but the original idea remained the same. I wanted it to be KISS Alive. The original title was KISS Alive 2, the movie. And it wasn't until later when I started talking about it that I was like, that really isn't a title. And I was like, I was trying to think of an old advertisement. And the advertisement actually ended up being the show of shows, which is probably what I should have called it. But there was an old advertisement, and I thought it said the greatest show on earth. So, but they've said the greatest show on earth so many times in so many interviews. So my little absent-mindedness brought this name, and I was like, oh, this is cool. It doesn't even need to be KISS in the title. It could just be the greatest show on earth, and KISS fans already know that this is KISS. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, because they do have a couple of movies, but they're just bad. You know, they're not representative of the legacy, right? They're not representative of the awesomeness that was going on in 77 and even later. I mean, it's just you know, the Phantom of the Park is just, you know, it is what it is, and that's okay. Yeah. It's not bad. It's just, it is what it is, and you know, and then, you know, Detroit Rock City, but they're not. Yeah. Those kind of films like you're talking about. So
I thought, you know, Detroit Rock City was a step in the right direction, yeah. But I thought Detroit Rock City was a victim of the late 90s shock comedies and teen comedies. I thought it was, you know, it suffered from that. Detroit Rock City could have been an Almost Famous. It could have been. It just wasn't. They took shock over substance, and it takes nothing away from the movie. I still enjoy it. I think it's great, but you know, for me, it's lacking. So looking at, I took a very KISS attitude to this. I took what I never saw and I did it, same as KISS did what they never saw on stage and did it on stage. So So there's something that I want to talk about, and I talked about this on another show that I was on. There are there's this little document that's going around that is there are notes. I think they're from Gene Simmons, and I guess they were maybe from management. They were for Bill O'Coin, but Gene had all these handwritten notes called The History of KISS, and it's on letterhead from the Baton Rouge Hilton. So it's probably around 78, 79. Probably 79, because they were on tour in 79. And Gene kind of goes over all these things that he wants in this movie. And I want to read you a series of notes on this. And I also want to preface this, too, by I hadn't seen this document until I was 90% done with Greatest Show on Earth. So the note says, shots of New York City The City That Made Kiss, Skyscrapers, Subway, Lights, see shots of Manhattan, and then go inside a Kiss concert. What does that sound like to you?
That sounds familiar.
So it goes on. It goes on. Include concert footage, black and white concert footage, but focus on 77. Go over Kiss World. Go over interviews. Hold on. So his notes are super shorthands. Go over interviews. Make sure you use footage from The Nightbird. Use footage from 2020, Hot Hero Sandwich, PM Magazines. Show The Warehouse. Show animated sequences. Talk to people that have created Kiss's costumes. Show footage from The Mike Douglas Show, In Concert, Midnight Special, Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, Land of Hype and Glory.
Sounds pretty similar.
So I remember after I completed this, someone showed this to me and I was like, I swear to God, I've never seen this before in my life. They're like, you're making the movie that should have happened. And at that point, there was a time where I had given up on The Greatest Show on Earth. There have been some troubles that I was having, and I put on the back burner for a while. But then once I kind of got this, once I picked it back up and I saw this, I was like, man, I got to finish this. I have to do this because who else is going to do it? No one else understands the passion that I have for this band, and no one has the eye that I have for filmmaking that I do. And that's not a slight to anyone else. It's just I don't see a lot of people telling stories the way that I tell stories. And that's not saying that someone else is bad. There's just a lot of different ways to do things. Some are bad, some are good, whatever. But I just never saw what I wanted to see. I mean, I go see a ton of movies. I'm a huge Marvel fan, and Spider-Man Homecoming is probably one of my favorite Spider-Man movies ever. It's the Spider-Man movie I would have made. So I saw that, but no one did Kiss how I thought they should have done Kiss. So I'll always remember right as I was done, probably early September, done with the very first print of the film, all the titles, all the effects, everything's all done. Drop it in my DVD player just to watch it, you know, on my screen. I remember watching it and I was just like, there was something different about watching it on the screen from beginning to end versus watching it as I'm editing it. And I finally understood what this thing was going to be. And I knew at that point, I was like, I have to show this to everyone. This is too good. Not tooting my own horn. This is too good to kind of sit on and just show people that come to my house. So I'll always remember the first time I watched it, because I must have seen this damn thing 500 times. You know, it was a year of my life editing this thing. But I'll always remember sitting down and watching it and going, finally, this is what I wanted to see. I want to take you guys back to the early 90s, maybe the late 80s for you guys too. But the time when bootlegs really started to come out and you started to see things that maybe you missed on TV in the 70s, or maybe something that you had never seen. And you're hearing about stuff like Hot Hero Sandwich from 79 and 3-2-1 Contact about building a Kiss show, and hearing about Land of Hype and Glory about talking about what goes into a show and seeing Kiss backstage. The lore of those clips kind of overshadowed what the actual clips were. You're like, wow, we're going to see Kiss backstage? We're going to see what goes into making a Kiss show? We're going to see, and you're seeing these clips, and they're not bad by any means, but you're like, oh, this is just a TV clip from the 70s by a guy that doesn't even like Kiss. Edwin Newman was not a Kiss fan, and it's clear by his narration and how he interviews the band. He's not a Kiss fan. He was almost belittling Kiss for saying that they're just a, you know, all flash and no substance. So the folklore of those clips kind of overshadowed what the actual clip was. So I remember, and maybe you guys could tell me too, but I remember the first time I saw those after hearing about them for so long, I was like, man, that's it. Like, this was like, I thought I was going to, where's the potatoes? Yeah. Where is that? Where is that? larger than life sensation. Where is that? Why has no one documented that? So I sat on that feeling for years until I did The Greatest Show on Earth.
Hmm. So why did you take it down? What was the what caused you to take it down?
Well, I didn't take it down. Eagle Rock Entertainment took it down. And they claimed that there was a 35-second clip of Kiss pouring the blood into the vat in upstate New York, that was infringing on copyright. Now, I'll tell you, when the film was uploaded, within seconds, Universal monetized all the audio content. So what that means is if there was any ad revenue generated from the views on that, it went to the copyright holders, which, again, fine. I wanted that to happen. But it was up for about a month, and it really started gaining steam after I had said that it was me, because at first I kept it all mysterious. I didn't tell anybody that was me. Then once I said that it was me, they had like 30,000 views in 9 days, and all of a sudden it was gone. So I probably made someone either in the Kiss camp or someone elsewhere very unhappy that maybe I did something good that they didn't think of. Don't know. But it was gone. So I didn't take it down. It was taken down on copyright grounds by Eagle Rock, unfortunately.
So what you said that the project took you a year to complete.
Yeah.
You also said that, you know, you had some things going on. You kind of stepped away from it for a while.
Yeah.
Was that part of that year to complete, or once you decided to get back into it, then it took you a year to complete?
That was part of it. That was part of it. And the arduous editing and syncing was probably about 6 months of it. There was a lot of me thinking about it before I actually did anything. Maybe there was probably about 2 to 4 months of me just making notes and just thinking, can I do this? Is this possible? And me just looking for stuff, me looking for old footage of New York City in the 70s, and me just looking for the best TV clips of Kiss that I could find. So the whole editing process probably took about 6 months. And what I mean by 6 months is I'd get up, I'd go to work, I would come home, and I would edit for probably about 5 to 6 hours a night, 5 nights a week. And sometimes on the weekends, I would do 12-hour days where I would edit for 12 hours on Saturday, 12 hours on a Sunday. Sometimes that would happen.
Did you remember to eat?
Yeah. I probably gained weight doing that because I was just in front of the damn computer the whole time. So, you know, it took a lot out of me to do. And at first, I didn't think it was going to be as time-consuming as it ended up being ultimately, but once I saw the light at the end of the tunnel, I got really excited to share it with people because it took on another life. Initially, my initial idea of the film was I wanted to weave in my personal Kiss-tory throughout the story, meaning that I became a fan of the band because of the 1977 time period. So I kind of wanted to weave my story on how that year kind of always worked its way back into my life. You know, my first album that I got on record was double platinum and Alive 2. First thing I saw was Kiss Meets the Phantom, which was from, it was in 78, but it was the Love Gun era. And, you know, the first time I saw the band was in 96. They were in the Love Gun costumes. So that year kind of always worked its way back into my life. So I had all this footage of me as a baby dancing to Kiss and a lot of things of me, you know, meeting Gene and doing all this stuff. So, but I thought it was really distracting, and I thought it really took away from the movie. It really wasn't a period piece until maybe 2 months before I was done with it. And it was too much about me, and I had to take a step back. This movie isn't about me. It's about Kiss. And it's about this time period of Kiss. So once I took all that crap out of there, which I still have, you got the print that you saw, the 1977 period piece. So, yeah.
And for those of who haven't seen the video yet, how long is the running time?
It's about 1 hour and 5 minutes. So it has 10 songs from Kiss Alive 2. And in between some of the songs, it has little documentary clips. There's three. Well, the original version of the film had 4 documentary sections. The newest version of the film has three documentary sections. That kind of goes over important periods of Kiss, Visit to Cadillac, the comic book, their first gold record or their first platinum record, some of the famous TV appearances in concert, Midnight Special, People's Choice Awards. And it kind of goes over, it tells the Kiss story. Why does Kiss wear the makeup? And I tried to make it a period piece. Now, granted, I had to fill in some gaps. So there are, I did use some interview clips from 1983, only of Gene and Paul, because I still had to tell a story. So, but I tried to really keep it as a period piece as much as I could. If you get a chance to watch this in the future, you really have to suspend disbelief and say, well, this came out in 77. There are little things that I use that are after 77 because I still had to tell the story. I couldn't, the limitations of the 70s footage available couldn't dictate the story that I needed to tell. I tried very, very hard not to use anything after 77 because this would have came out in 78. but again, there is still a story that I wanted to tell. So I had to use little things here and there. You probably didn't even notice. I hope you guys didn't notice. I hope I didn't take it away.
I didn't notice. I was watching it. I wasn't studying it.
That's for later.
I have a tendency to do that. I watch stuff. I don't study it for the most part. I look at it for entertainment purposes and move on. There are people that comb things. I'm not one of those. One of those. So
we call them nitpickers.
Yeah, nitpickers. Yeah. So are you thinking about another project? Or you got something else you're cooking? Or are you like, I just got to walk away for a while? And
well, I will tell you this. The Greatest Show on Earth is not dead yet. So what that means, maybe we'll see in the next couple of days, weeks, months. I know my next plan for that is I am going to record a director commentary track on it where I kind of go into detail as to why I did what I did. And Julian Gill from the Kiss FAQ is going to record it with me because he's just a wealth of knowledge of all things Kiss. So I'll tell my story as how this was made, and he'll kind of, you know, factually correct me, Kiss things, or we'll kind of have a back and forth on that. Many commentary tracks have stuff like that. So that's the first thing that's on the burner. The second thing is I want people to see this that didn't get a chance to see this. So, excuse me, I'm working my butt off to try and get this out to you guys so that way you can see it. I did hear a rumor that it might be screened at Rockin' Pod this coming summer. So more news on that. I know I was just on Decibel Geek, more news on that as that happens. There's a lot of logistical things that we'd have to do to actually make that a reality. I would love to do it, and I would love to kind of see people's reaction to it after seeing it. Because you know, I'm a performer. For you guys that don't know that are watching, I used to play Peter Criss in a well-known Kiss tribute band for over 15 years, and I stepped away from that about 2 years ago, and I've never been happier since I stepped away. But I'm always used to that kind of instant gratification. You know, I play something and people are screaming. It's different when you're a filmmaker. So I'm kind of hoping that I get to merge those two things together and I get to see people's reaction after they watch it. That's not to say I haven't seen reactions from this movie. I mean, a lot of people have been awesome. I've been blown away by the reaction. You know, I'll read one of the comments that I just got very recently. Let's see here. Someone said, "Hey Andrew, just want to let you know how much I enjoyed Greatest Show on Earth. Absolutely fantastic job." That was Phil Seuss from Ace Frehley Band. So you know, it's got some far reaches. Yeah. So there are things cooking that I don't really want to talk about right now. Because The Greatest Show on Earth isn't done yet. I'm not done with it yet. I thought that maybe I was going to stop and I was going to let it kind of sit, but it can't. There are people that are here in shows like yours. They're here in the Decibel Geek. or they're here in Podcast Rock City that like, man, I want to see this. So I owe it to KISS fans for them to be able to see this and to say if they love it or if they don't love it. You know, it doesn't really bother me if someone doesn't like it. There hasn't been anyone that hasn't disliked it. Everything has been extremely positive. And I was actually pretty taken aback by that. There was a great thread on the KISS FAQ started by a member, and it was all positive. I mean, you guys visit the FAQ all the time. There's so much negativity on there. There's so much negativity on Facebook.
But I was believe shocked. Julia now calls it the cesspool.
Yeah. But just imagine, there's all that negativity, and then this thing comes out, and it's everyone is talking about how great it was back then, or how much they love this, or how they're like, man, I wish it was longer, or I watched it 3 times today, and what a great job, and who did this? You know, I was really, really taken aback by it. So, you know, whatever happens, it happens. If I get a lawsuit slapped on my face because of this, it is what it is. I'm a big guy. It would be my pill to swallow. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This isn't about financial gain. This isn't about anything. This is about the love for the band. It really is.
Yeah. How would you get a lawsuit for something was it public domain? Because you're not charging for it. So is it, and you're not making any money on it. So what would be the reason for a lawsuit?
There's a super gray area between fan films and all that kind of stuff. I'm using copywritten materials to make something different. So they would be well within their legal means to come after me for that. Because you could say that I was distributing copywritten material. You know, again, the Star Wars fan film community is huge. There are these awesome fan edits out there that if you don't know about them, look them up. They are awesome. I don't know if they've ever gotten into any legal trouble or not, but again, it's such a gray area. So, I don't know what type of lawsuit that I could get, but I know that someone would be well within their legal means to come after me for doing this.
Okay.
And again, maybe it won't. I don't know. But I gotta be really transparent with this. I didn't think about this in a legal standpoint. I didn't think about this as a music business major. I just thought about this as a fan. And I really think that more people should think like that, because there are people that are out there selling bootlegs, which I do not condone, and I've never done. So I'm hoping that if the band has seen this, or if they will see it, they know the difference.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I didn't have that knowledge at all, so just couldn't figure it out.
It's such a gray area. It really is. Could it have been different if I didn't, you know, sync that footage to KISS Alive 2? Maybe. But that would have killed how cool this project is. That's what made this project so cool, is hearing KISS Alive and seeing KISS Alive 2. That's what made the project so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Universal Records owns KISS Alive 2. So, you know, we don't know who owns a lot of this footage. You know, VH1 Classic is the label that put out the Kissology series. Maybe VH1 owns the material. We don't know. The legal standpoint of a lot of this footage is unknown. So it's a gray area. It really is. And that's why all these shows that I go on, every place that I appear, I say, you want to support this? Do not give me a dime. Go and buy a KISS record, or write on KISS's Facebook page that, hey, I joined the KISS Army because I saw the greatest show on earth. You know, send a message to the band that way. And that's the best way to do it. That really is. Because there are these bootleggers that will charge you money for a concert on a VHS, DVD, whatever. They'll charge you. I won't do that. And that's also why you will not see me distributing physical copies of this ever. You just won't. I'll never do it.
Cool.
Well, do you have anything else to say about this project?
Got any other questions? I mean, I'm good at the questions back and forth. That's what I'm good at.
Have you ever done any other projects like this at all? I mean, for anybody or anything? I mean, is there any other, or have you thought about, you know, other bands that you kind of like, you know, that you're into, or is it just, this is just kind of this is the thing, and
it's okay. Always been the thing. I've made other short films, and I'm actually working on a big 3-part, you know, short film that I'm hoping to start production on next year. But I've done other short films. I've done other music videos. I edit my own podcast, Kiss My Collectibles, kissmycollectibles.com. But I've done other things like that before.
Long enough.
I've never done anything like this before, and I probably won't ever do it again. I don't have the passion for anything like I have for Kiss.
Yeah, there you go. That was the question.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that was the question. Yeah. Going back to The Greatest Show on Earth for a minute, did you ever give any thought to using the audio from the what is called the Lost Kiss Alive tape from the 77 Tokyo show,
yes, there's actually something on YouTube that somebody synced the Japan 77 show to that. So someone did that, and that was I saw that after I had already started Greatest Show on Earth. But again, that wasn't what it was about. I mean, I did buy that bootleg maybe in 2001 or 2002 at one of the old Kiss conventions back in Hackensack, New Jersey. I did, but man, there was nothing like Kiss Alive 2 for me. I had Kiss Alive 2 since I was a kid, and I remember getting the remastered CD Christmas 97, and for some reason, Christmas time always reminds me of Kiss Alive 2. So I never thought of doing anything but Kiss Alive 2, because nothing was, I didn't have an emotional connection to anything like I had Alive 2.
That makes good sense.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think everybody has, all Kiss fans have that one thing, item, time, whatever, that is just that moment, that defining moment that you just kind of go, yeah, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
And it may be the first time you heard them or the first time you saw them or whatever, or it may be something even later. You know, and it's different for different people. It's you know, the comment you made about you know, Kiss FAQ, and you know, it's interesting that it's the band that people love to argue about because they want to make sure they're so passionate about all of it, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, whatever their take is on it. It's and I don't know if that's with other bands, you know, to your point about, you know, I'm not that passionate about anybody else, you know, I don't know, is that, do Aerosmith fans argue like that, or do, you know,
they don't have
Queen fans argue like that?
Well,
I mean,
Aerosmith,
I don't know,
doesn't have quote unquote scab members.
Well, I was just the first person I could think of that stuck in my head. So
yeah, but other bands have had other missteps before.
Oh, sure.
I don't follow any other bands aside from maybe Motley Crue, like Kiss. So, but
I guess Van Halen could have some.
Van Halen maybe could have that.
Some pretty heated arguments.
Speaking of Motley Crue, I heard today that the Dirt's going to be released in
March 32nd.
That was funny. March 22nd on Netflix. So yes, back to Van Halen and Kiss and Aerosmith and whatever.
No, but I think, but even then, I mean, I guess, and because I don't follow them as much as I do, you know, Kiss and read as much and all that other kind of stuff. But, you know, you do hear those people that are just passionate about which Van Halen's the right Van Halen and all that other kind of stuff. But, and they went through, but they've been through a few iterations of lead singer. So, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. And it's funny to watch or see people get in arguments about that stuff like out in public, like at expos or whatever, and it's like, you know, they're respectfully arguing, but they're really
some
going
people
at
are not,
it. It's hilarious.
Some people are not respectfully arguing. You know?
Some people are not respectfully arguing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never, I mean, I think there's such a division in Kiss fans because the band themselves are so outspoken as to what they are or are not doing. You know, when the band was doing the farewell tour in 2000. It was like, this is it. We're never going to be doing this again. And then they lied. Or I'm not going to say they lied. They just decided to continue. So I think that this band is so accessible and is so outspoken that it's very easy for someone to hear something and disagree with it. When was the last time you heard an Eddie Van Halen interview?
Yeah, I've never heard an Eddie Van Halen interview.
I don't think I've ever heard an Eddie Van Halen
interview. Or even read something from Eddie or Alex or Wolfgang or Sammy. I mean, it's very, very little, but I could pull up 37 Gene Simmons interviews right now if I wanted to.
Gene interviews from today.
Yeah. So I think that maybe, and maybe someone hasn't said this, that Kiss is the reason why there's such a division is because Kiss is so outspoken. I don't think they're full of shit like people say they are. I just think that they've done so much that people change and things just change over time. That's what I think.
Yeah. I'm just glad it's still, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in 3 years and, you know, if it's really truly over. And then do we still have these conversations? Is there still the vault thing going on? I mean, not that, but is there something else like that?
Yeah, it's the greatest show on earth. It's after this is done, yeah. And then yeah. The greatest show on earth comes out, and then we can talk about that. You know, that's what needs to happen, in my opinion. You know, the band needs to take their final bow, which they deserve to do that. I don't think the tour is going to last 3 years. I think it's going to probably be 2 years with breaks in between. And I do think that after they do these dates that they have scheduled, there's going to be breaks in between things. But after that, they need to pay tribute to the history of the band. And hopefully they do so.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Andrew, if you don't have anything else, we appreciate having you on the show.
Hey, it was a pleasure, and thank you for having me, and hope to see you guys at an expo pretty soon.
Better.
We're not going to Jersey, so.
No, me neither. Me neither.
That's too long a drive.
It'd be kind of cool, though. I'd love to see that. Set. I mean, I'd love to see it. Well, we will see it. It's just we have to wait for it to come out on YouTube.
Yeah,
we're gonna see it though.
Yeah. We'll see it. I just, my job is pretty taxing sometimes, so I can't get away as much as I used to be able to.
Yeah, real jobs get in the way.
Yeah.
Well, Andrew, before I take us out of here, pimp your podcast again.
Make sure you check me out on Kiss My Collectibles. That's Kiss My Collectibles with a K. .com. Follow us on Facebook, on YouTube, and visit our website to see all the past episodes. We are a Kiss Collecting podcast. We don't release episodes as often as some of the other guys do, but we do try to do once every 2 weeks. So check us out at kissmycollectibles.com.
All right, and check out agesofrock.com for all of your Ages of Rock bullshit. Facebook, Stitcher Radio, all that good stuff. Oh, by the way, y'all noticed that Dennis isn't here tonight.
He
told me to tell you guys he was having pussy problems. His cat got out and he's out looking for it. So you guys will see Dennis on the next episode. You will see Bill on the next episode. You will not see me on the next episode.
So we're running a special here. The three of us cannot be on the same episode.
That's right.
3 weeks in a row. So
there you go.
Yeah, because Bill missed last episode.
That's right.
Holy crap, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Peace out.
Later, peeps.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.